The Christian in Complete Armor by William Grinnell. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 19 and 20. Chapter 8 shows it is the minister's duty to make known the gospel. You have had the sublime nature of the gospel set forth. It is a mystery. Now follows what the minister's duty is in reference to the gospel, and that is to promulgate and publish this mystery to the sons of men, to make known the mystery of the gospel. Here, the minister's work is laid out. He is, with all possible clearness, to open this mystery and expose it to the view of the people. Mark, the gospel is his subject, and to make it known is his duty. So runs the minister's commission for his office. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel unto every creature. Mark chapter 16, verse 15. We hear people sometimes say, the preacher is beside his text, but he is never beside his errand, so long as it is the gospel he makes known. Whatever is his text, this is to be his design. His commission is to make known the gospel. To deliver that, therefore, which is not reduced to this, is besides his instructions. Nothing but the preaching of the gospel can reach the end for which the gospel ministry was appointed, and that is the salvation of souls. After that is in the wisdom of God, the world by wisdom knew not God, it pleased God, by the foolishness of preaching to save them that believe. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 21. The great book of the creation had lain long enough open before the world's eyes, yet they could never come to the saving knowledge of God by all that divine wisdom which is written with the finger of God in every page thereof. Therefore it pleased God to send his servant, that by preaching the gospel poor souls might believe on Christ, and believing might be saved. No doctrine but the gospel can save a soul, nor the gospel itself, except it be made known. Section 1. No doctrine but the gospel can save a soul. Galen, G-A-L-E-N, may teach you to preserve your health if you will follow his rules. Littleton, L-Y-T-T-L-E-T-O-N, and other lawyers will teach you how to save your estates. Plato and other philosophers will learn you how to save your credit among men, but in an outwardly just, inoffensive life. Their doctrine will be a means to save you from many gross sins, but which you may be applauded by your neighbor on earth and perhaps less tormented in hell. But it is the gospel alone whereby you can be taught the salvation of your souls. But what do I speak of these? It is not God's own law, the moral, I mean, that is able to save you. God would never have been at such a vast expense in the death of his Son to erect another law, namely, the law of faith, if that would have served for this purpose. For if righteousness comes by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. Galatians 2:21. Why, then, do ministers preach the law? If they preach it as they should, they preach it in subservience to the gospel, not in oppression. He that knows how to distinguish well between the law and the gospel, let him bless God and know that he deserves the name of a divine. We must preach it, a covenant of life. Holiness to the matter and substance of it is the same it ever was. The gospel destroys not the law in this sense, but adds a strong enforcement to all its commands. Again, we must preach the law as a necessary means to drive souls out of themselves to Christ and the gospel. But sinners lie in their lust as fish in the mud, out of which there is no getting them but by laying hard upon their consciences with the threatenings of the law. Romans 5:20. Moreover, the law entered that the offense might abound, that is, in the conscience by conviction, not in life by commission. The law shows what sin is. I mean, it tells when we commit a sin, and what a hateful and dangerous thing we do in committing of it. How we bring God with all his strength against us. Now, this is necessary for the sinners entertaining the gospel. The sharp point of the law must prick the conscience before the creature can, by the promises of the gospel, be drawn to Christ. The field is not fit for the seed to be cast into it till the plow hath broken it up, nor is the soul prepared to receive the mercy of the gospel till broken with the terrors of the law. Section 2. The gospel itself saves not, except it be made known. If our gospel be hid, it is hid to them that are lost. 2 Corinthians 4:3. Where God sends no light, he intends no love. In bodily sickness a physician may make a cure, though his patient knows not what the medicine is that he uses. But the soul must know its remedy before he can have any healing benefit from it. In Luke 1, verse 77, John is sent to give knowledge of salvation for the remission of sins. No knowledge, no remission. Christ must be lifted up on the pole of the gospel as well on the tree of the cross, that by an eye of faith we may look on him and so be healed. John 3:14. Look unto me and be ye saved. Isaiah 45, verse 22. A man that sees may lead another that is blind to the place he would go. But he that would go to heaven must have an eye in his own head to see his way, or he will never come there. The just shall live by faith. Habakkuk 2:4. Not by another's. Now, saving faith is a grace that sees its object. It is the evidence of things not seen. Hebrews 11:1. That is, which are not seen by sense. I know whom I have believed. 2 Timothy 1:12. Therefore faith is often set out by knowledge. This is life eternal, that we might know thee, the only true God, and Jesus Christ whom thou hast sent. John 17:3. Now how can they know Christ and life eternal, till the gospel be made known, which bringeth him and life by him to light? 2 Timothy 1:10. And by whom shall the gospel be made known, if not by the ministers of it? Thus Romans 10:14. How shall they call on him in whom they have not believed? And how shall they believe in him on of whom they have not heard? And how shall they hear without a preacher? So that this great work lies at the minister's door. He is to make known the mystery of the gospel. But what need now of preaching? This was the work of those that were to plant a church. Now the church is planted and the gospel made known. This labor may be spared. The ministry of the gospel was not intended only to plant a church, but to carry out its growth also. What Paul plants, Apollo comes after to water. 1 Corinthians 3:6. When the foundation is laid, must not the house be built? And this Christ gave ministers to his church for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 12. The scaffold is not taken down till the building is finished, but rather to be raised higher and higher as the fabric goes up. Thus Paul went on in his ministry from lower points to higher, from foundation to superstructural truths. Hebrews chapter 6, verse 1. A famous church was planted at Thessalonica, but there was something lacking in their faith, which Paul longed to come and carry on to further perfection. 1 Thessalonians 3:10. Surely they that think there is so little need of preaching forget that the gospel is a mystery, such a mystery as can never be fully taught by the minister or learned by the people. Neither do they consider how many engineers Satan hath at work continually to undermine the gospel, both as a mystery of faith and godliness also. Hath not he his seedmen there are always scattering corrupt doctrine? Surely then the faithful minister had need obviate their designs by making known the truth, that his people may not want an antidote to fortify them against their poison. Are there not corruptions in the bosoms of the best, and daily temptations from Satan in the world to draw these forth, whereby they are always in danger and often sadly foiled? In a word, is not grace planted in a cold soil that needs cherishing from the gospel ministry? Do we not see that what it is got in one Sabbath by preaching the word is much impaired by the next. Truly our hearts are like lean ground that needs ever and anon a shower, or else the corn withers and changes its hue. Oh, what barren heathens would the most flourishing churches soon prove if these clouds did not drop upon them. The Christian to whom Paul wrote were of a high form, no novice, but well grounded and rooted in the faith. Yet the apostle says, 2 Peter 1:12, I will not be negligent to put you always in remembrance of these things, though you know them and be established in the present truth. Section 3. First to the ministers. It reproves the vainglorious preacher, who instead of making known the mystery of the gospel, enters the pulpit to make himself known, who blows up his sermon with a windy pomp of words and frames his discourse rather to tickle their ears than to profit their souls, to send them home applauding the preacher for his wit rather than admiring the excellencies of Christ and the riches of his grace. Thus, many speak one word for Christ and two for themselves. This is a great wickedness, which Paul solemnly clears himself of, 1 Thessalonians 2, verses 5 and 6. Neither at any time used we flattering words, as you know, nor a cloak of covetousness, God is witness, nor of men sought we glory. Oh, how seldom are any converted by such sermons. These vainglorious preachers may be like Rachel, fair, but their ministry is likely to be barren. Secondly, abstruse preachers who do not make the mysteries of the gospel known, but make truths plain in themselves mysterious by their dark, perplexed discourses upon them. What is said of some commentators, that the place on which they treat were plain till they expounded them, may be said of some preachers, their text was clear till their obscured discourse upon it darkened it. What greater wrong can a preacher do his hearers than this? The preacher is to open scriptures, but these turn the key the wrong way and lock them up from their knowledge. They are to hold up the gospel glass before their people, whereby they may see to dress their souls like a bride against their husband's coming. But by that time that they have breathed on their text, it is so obscure that they cannot see their faces in it. That water is not the deepest, it is thickest and muddy, nor the matter always the most profound when the preacher's expression is dark and obscure. We count it a blemish in speech when a man's pronunciation is not distinct. I know not how it should be thought a perfection to be obscure in the deliverancy of our conceptions. The deeper the sculpture in the seal, the clearer the impression. The more fully any man understands a thing, the more able he will be to deliver it plainly to others. As eclipsed speech comes from impediment to the instruments of speech, so a dark and obscure delivery of our thoughts bewrays a defect in our apprehension, except it should come from an affection of soaring high and our expressions above the reach of vulgar understandings, and this is worst of all. Thirdly, the mere moral preacher, the stream of whose preaching runs not in an evangelical channel. Moral duties he presses, and sins against the moral law he exclaims against. Neither dare I blame him for that. The Christian's creed does not make void the Ten Commandments. One of the first sermons our Savior preached was most of it spent in pressing moral duties, Matthew 5. And never was there more need of this than in our days, in which Christianity hath been so wounded in its reputation by the moral dishonesty of many of its professors. But I level my reproof against them for this, that they do not preach the law evangelically, and make that the main design of their ministry, for which they receive their commission, that is, to make known the mystery of the gospel, to preach the unsearchable riches of Christ, and to make all men see what is the fellowship of the mystery from which the beginning of the world hath been hid in God, who created all things by Jesus Christ. Ephesians 3, verses 8 and 9. Surely it is a foul plot upon their sermons and labors, who reveal little of Christ and the mystery of the gospel through the whole course of their ministry. The woe is pronounced not only against the indolent minister, but also against the minister who preaches not the gospel. Woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 16. A lecture on ethics will not make thy people wise unto salvation. It were well if thou couldst preach thy drunken neighbor sober, and the riotous temperate. But this is no more than Plato did for his Plotimo. This may make them men. They were before beasts, but thou must preach them out of themselves, as well as out of their flagellation practices, from the confidences of their righteousness, as well as from the love of their sins, or thou leavest them short of heaven. In a word, preach moral duties, but in an evangelical strain. Convince them they cannot do without grace from Christ, for want of which the heathen's virtues were but gilded vices. We must come to good works by faith, and not to faith by good works. The tree must be good before the fruit can be so. Without me ye can do nothing. Then convince them, when they are most exact in moral duties, this must not be their righteousness before God. The robe with which must cover their souls must be the homespun garment of their own inherent righteousness wrought in them, but of Christ's righteousness which he wrought in them. End of chapter 8.